Greetings, listeners and friends of RAOTC. This is VK3OTN, the station of the Radio Amateurs Old Timers Club of Australia, saying welcome to this broadcast for August 2018.
And hello, listeners, from me.
Frequencies. You know by now that this broadcast is carried on a range of frequencies each first Monday morning of the month, except for January. However, please don't forget to repeat transmissions at night at 10.30 hours UTC on 80 metres in Melbourne and Tasmania via a telecast. These details can all be found on our webpage, www.raotc.org.au. And we again thank all our volunteers who relay this program at the various times.
Club news. Firstly, this month, an apology. In last month's broadcast, we heard from Will, VK6UU, on the development of the WIA broadcasts in Western Australia. There was also another voice on that tape, which I failed to acknowledge. This voice was either Ono, VK6FLAB, or Glyn, VK6PAW, who apparently are the regular presenters of the weekly News West broadcast. I do apologise to these gentlemen for my omission to acknowledge them last month. Also last month, we heard about efforts to make contact with English hams. Members and friends may be interested to know that on the 22nd of September 1918, direct wireless messages were received in Australia from the Marconi station in the UK for the first time. This means that this year marks the 100th anniversary of this event. The WIA will operate a special event call sign from 0000 UTC on the 1st of September 2018 to 2359 UTC on the 30th of September 2018. Each state or territory will have available to it VI and the state number Marconi. A roster for the use of the special event call sign is available for clubs, groups and individuals for a 48-hour time slot over September to make use of this special event call sign. You can express interest in using the call sign by sending an email to vk3dac@wia.org.au. In the email, your name, address, station location and call sign are required. We have not as yet had any replies to the positions advertised in recent months. That is, broadcast officer, QSO party manager, and a recorder of OTN audio. So, if you are interested, please contact us now. The management committee will meet later this month to debate these issues and other things currently before it. It is hoped to report the findings of this meeting in next month's bulletin. The 2018 QSO party is not far off. Saturday the 15th of September is the date set down, and we hope that you all will take part at some time during the 2 hours. The details of this event are on the club webpage and will be in your OTN journal, which will be out in about a month's time. We look forward to hearing you all during this time.
You are reminded too of the AGM and luncheon in Melbourne on Thursday the 27th of September at the Bentley Club. 1200 hours for the AGM and the luncheon will follow. It was sad to learn that RAOTC committee member Anthony Rogers, VK3JIA, is not at all well and therefore will not be seeking re-election at the AGM. This will be acknowledged at that time. We wish Anthony every best wish for the future and that his medical advisers will be able to get him back on track as far as his health is concerned. Thank you, Anthony, for your service to RAOTC in this capacity.
This month, it is pleasing not to be able to report any SK members, but at the same time, it is sad that there have been no new members either. The August committee meeting will hear that membership is slowly falling, so the question has to be asked, what are you doing to recruit new members? Do you speak of RAOTC in any of your contacts? Can you assist in any way? Please give this serious consideration.
This is VK3OTM, the station of the Radio Amateurs and Old Timers Club of Australia. There is a lot of talk at present about quantum computing and quantum physics in general. Here is an article I came across earlier this year about attempts to use radio in this medium.
Earlier in the year, when I was seeking ideas for what to present in the programs this year, I came across the heading, Spinning the Hits, Quantum Radio Comes One Step Closer. I was, of course, immediately intrigued, and the byline says, how do you communicate in environments that radio waves can't penetrate? By harnessing the power of magnetism. The article which follows is written by Andrew P. Street, a widely published journalist and non-fiction author and a former columnist with the Sydney Morning Herald. We take easy communication for granted in our globally connected world, but there are plenty of places where the environment hinders the straightforward use of radio signals, underwater, for example, or underground, or in areas of high electromagnetic interference. This also poses challenges for mapping the oceans or inside mines where GPS cannot penetrate. The issue is that the higher the radio frequency, the less good the signal is at penetrating matter. This is why your phone cuts out while you're driving in tunnels, while the lower frequency FM radio reception gets patchy, but the even lower frequency AM radio continues to be reasonably audible. A solution, however, may be at hand. Researchers at the National Institute of Standard and Technology, NIST, in Boulder, Colorado, have managed a proof of concept for quantum radio, manipulating the magnetic field of rubidium atoms to send digital signals. The work is described in the journal Review of Scientific Instruments. Quote, the big issues with the very low frequency communications, including magnetic radio, is poor receiver sensitivity and extremely limited bandwidth of existing transmitters and receivers. This means the data rate is zilch, NIST project leader Dave Howe explains. The best magnetic field sensitivity is obtained using quantum sensors. The increased sensitivity leads in principle to longer communications range. The quantum approach also offers the possibility to get high bandwidth communications like a cell phone has. End of quote. Modulating the spin of the atoms vertically and horizontally via a magnetic field sensor allowed the researchers to create zero and one positions, which could be transmitted to and read by a direct current magnetometer. The atoms themselves are in a tiny glass container, and the changes in their spin creates alternating current electric signals. The voltages are then read by a light detector. Since these are mostly well understood technologies, such detectors should be able to be made at low cost, at small size, and work in a normal temperature range, making them a practical system for field use. The researchers also developed a signal processing technique to reduce environmental noise, for example, from the electrical grid, and thereby increase the range of communications. The plan from here is to develop ways in which the signal can be boosted and ways to improve bandwidth further. There are also some challenges in pinpointing the location of a receiver, which they are hopeful will be addressed by better digital algorithms and noise suppression. Final quote, atoms offer very fast response plus very high sensitivity, while classical communications involves a trade-off between bandwidth and sensitivity, says Howe. We can now get both with quantum sensors.
This is VK3OTN, the station of the Radio Amateurs Old Timers Club of Australia.
Ever since the first transistor was invented and led the way to modern electronics, the search has been on for miniaturization. It is fair to say that this limit is almost reached, but batteries continue to be a research subject in themselves. Here is an article about possibly slimmer phones. I would guess that these days there is no one unfamiliar with the mobile phone. We either like them or we dislike them, particularly the social manners which have grown up around their usage. However, according to science writer Lydia Hales, writing in Science in Public, there is every chance that these devices will become thinner. And the reason? Graphene, not glass, is the key to better optics. A lens just a billionth of a metre thick could transform phone cameras. Researchers at Swinburne University in Melbourne, Australia, have created ultra-thin lenses that cap an optical fibre and can produce images with the quality and sharpness of much larger glass lenses. Quote, compared with current lenses, our graphene lens only needs one film to achieve the same resolution, end of quote, says Professor Bahua Jia, a research leader at Swinburne Centre for Microphotonics. Quote, in the future, mobile phones could be much thinner without having to sacrifice the quality of their cameras. Our lens also allows infrared light to pass through, which glass lenses don't, end of quote. Producing graphene can be costly and challenging, so Bahua and her colleagues used a laser to pattern layers of graphene oxide. By then removing the oxygen, they produced low-cost, patterned films of graphene 1,000 times thinner than human hair. Quote, by patterning the graphene oxide film in this way, its optical and electrical properties can be altered, which allowed us to place them in different devices, she says. Warm objects give off infrared light, so mobile phones with graphene lenses could be used to scan for hot spots in the human body and help in the early identification of diseases like breast cancer. By attaching the lens to a fiber optic tip, endoscopes, instruments that are currently several millimetres wide, could be made 1 million times smaller. Bahua's work on graphene lenses was published in 2015 in Communications. The team is also investigating graphene's amazing properties for their potential use as supercapacitors, capable of storing very large amounts of energy, which could replace conventional batteries. You are listening to VK3OTN, bringing the monthly news and information bulletin for members and friends of the Old Timers Club. Our selected program this month seems a little shorter than usual, perhaps because our first talk was not especially long. Here is a talk from Dr. Norman Swan, a doctor, a multi-award winning producer and broadcaster on health issues with the ABC. and it is entitled No Easy Fix for Alzheimer's Disease. Hopes of a cure for Alzheimer's disease being on the horizon took a blow when drug giant Pfizer announced in January, after two decades and millions of dollars spent, it was pulling the plug on Alzheimer's research. Pfizer's research had focused on trying to clear away brain deposits of a protein called amyloid beta. Some researchers think that these deposits might have been the wrong target. Others think trials failed because treatments started too late, and because people who were selected for treatment might not all have been suffering from Alzheimer's disease. The latest strategy is to try to select people who show diagnostic markers of an earlier stage of Alzheimer's disease. It is known as the Alzheimer's prodrome. At this stage, people experience some memory problems, but still fall within the norms of cognitive functions. There are, however, clinically detectable changes. Samples of cerebrospinal fluid show raised levels of amyloid beta, and MRI scans show shrinkage of the hippocampus, the structure crucial for forming memories. One great hope for vitamin fans and researchers alike is that dietary supplements could prevent the worsening of Alzheimer's disease. So far, antioxidants, in particular vitamin E, have been disappointing, but there has been hope for a supplement called Fortisyn Connect. Designed to boost brain function, it contains a cocktail of omega-3, fatty acids, minerals and vitamins, specifically DHA, EPA, uridine, monophosphate, choline, vitamins B12, B6, C and E, and folic acid, phospholipids and selenium. The concentrations of these nutrients in the blood and brains of participants with Alzheimer's disease are lower than normal. Animal studies show the cocktail improves communication between brain cells, blood flow, regeneration of cells in the hippocampus, and cognitive function. This hopeful tonic, now marketed by Dutch company Nutritia as Suvenade, has been previously tested in three clinical trials on people with mild to moderate Alzheimer's disease. The trials, lasting 3 to 6 months, suggested a helpful effect only in people with mild Alzheimer's. So a consortium of researchers in Europe and the US, including academics and people from pharmaceutical companies, decided to test patients at the earlier prodromal stage of the disease, having mild memory problems but detectable brain changes and elevated levels of amyloid beta in their cerebrospinal fluid. Recruited from memory clinics across Finland, Germany, the Netherlands and Switzerland, 311 people aged 55 to 85 completed the study. Half got Suvenade as a strawberry or vanilla-flavoured daily drink. Half just got a flavoured drink. The results of the two-year study were published in the latest, The Lancet Neurology. Neuropsychological tests showed no difference between the two groups. There was, however, less shrinkage of the hippocampus in the supplemented group, along with a slight but significant positive effect suggested by a secondary measure of how well the patients were functioning, a clinical dementia rating based on structured interviews, which may or may not mean something. The trouble with the study was that the overall rate of cognitive decline was slower than expected in both groups. That suggests there needed to be more people in the study and that it might have needed to go on longer. So it is still an open question whether this cocktail has an effect
Even if it does, it is unlikely to be dramatic. Is there any clear evidence of something that can forestall Alzheimer's disease? A modest bit of good news is that the same factors that protect against heart disease, healthy food, keeping your weight down, exercise, lowering high blood pressure, avoiding diabetes and not smoking, protect against blood vessel disease in the brain, which it is thought contributes to Alzheimer's disease. This is supported by statistics from Europe that indicate dementia rates are falling with heart disease and stroke incidence. One of the strongest protective factors, though, is education. A 2014 study published in Lancet Neurology found the more education a person received early in life, the later they developed dementia or not at all. That fits with the cognitive reserve theory. The more educated you are, the denser your neural networks, so you have more brain capacity to start with. While the evidence isn't clear, you certainly can't do any harm by learning a language or a musical instrument in midlife in the hope it will exercise your brain enough to keep dementia at bay at least for a little longer.
It has been a long-standing practice of these broadcasts to finish off with something humorous. So here is today's offering.
Having left the area some years ago, a teenage girl went to confession in the church she had attended as a child. The priest recognized her and asked her what she had been doing with her life. "I'm an acrobatic dancer, Father," she replied. "And what does that entail?" "I can show you if you like, Father." "Please do." With that, the girl performed an impressive series of cartwheels, somersaults, handstands and backflips across the church. Waiting their turn near the confessional were two middle-aged women. One said to the other, "Will you just look at the penance Father O'Reilly is giving out tonight, and me with no bloomers on?"
Our program this month is a little shorter than we like it to be, so here is a somewhat innocuous second joke for you all.
A murder suspect was holed up in his house, surrounded by armed police officers. With no end to the siege in sight, the officer in charge yelled, "Come on out, or I'll come in there myself and drag you out." The suspect shouted back, "I'm warning you. If you don't wipe your feet when you come in, my wife will kill us both."
Thank you for listening. This concludes our session for this month. We shall be back with you on Monday, the 3rd of September, 2018. Until then, keep well and smiling. This is VK3OTN, the station of the Radio Amateurs Old Timers Club of Australia, saying 73, and listening now for any check-ins and callbacks.